Well, good morning. It's good to see each and every one of you. We're thankful to have you. If you're visiting with us, we're glad you're here. Hope you'll come back and be with us. You're trying to serve God in this place, to follow what is in this book, and if we can help you in answering questions, then we'd be happy to engage you in the discussion of what the Scriptures say. We're glad that you're here. One of my all-time favorite movies, I think I probably have told you this before, is the movie Field of Dreams. How many of y'all have seen The Field of Dreams? Okay, well, it's better than Ben-Hur. I've asked that before and got total blank stares, but I know that goes way back. But The Field of Dreams is one of those movies that has baseball in it. It has ghosts. It has make-believe. It has the voice of Darth Vader. I mean, all of those things. James Earl Jones is one of the great actors of that generation. And most of y'all probably wouldn't know him that are younger. But Kevin Costner, all of those things make up for just a really great movie. And there is a great story in it. If you'll bear with me, if you don't know about it, Kevin Costner plays an Iowa corn farmer named Ray Consuelo. And he is out in his field of corn one day, and he hears a voice that says to him, if you build it, he will come. And so he has to hear this a few times before finally he gets a vision of a baseball diamond, a really pretty normal American baseball diamond. And so he gets the crazy idea to plow the corn up and build the baseball diamond. And then one day, out of the edge of the field, of the baseball field, in the corn, that all of these ghosts come walking out in like 1920s, somewhere along in there, baseball uniforms. And they're some of the great baseball players of the past, and they come out and play on the field, and he's able to talk to them, but they cannot leave the field. If they cross the line, there's no crossing that line. He can. And so he engages them and still doesn't know why in the world is happening, but it gets more and more intriguing. And then he is sent on a mission. Another vision comes to him, and he goes to find the guy named Terrence Mann, who is a recluse. He's been a very famous civil rights leader and author, and that's who plays the voice of Darth Vader, James Earl Jones. And so they come back on the road from Minnesota to Iowa. You're going to have to watch the movie to fill in the rest of it. And Ray begins to talk about, or they begin to talk about their family. And so Ray talks about that his mother had died when he was young. He was a teenager in his late teens. And that the only thing he said that my father and I had in common, the only thing we had in common was baseball. And then he said it was the rebellious 60s and I was a teenager and my dad made me mad one time and I argued with him and finally I said to him in a fit of rage that I could never respect a man whose hero was Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's one of the players that came on the field in the movie. Shoeless Joe Jackson was accused of sabotaging the 1920 World Series for gambling to make it a profitable endeavor on their part and others. And then he said to Terrence Mann, who's played by James Earl Jones, he said, I stormed out of the house and I never saw my dad again until he was in his coffin. Now those are bitter stories that have been told many, many times. It is the story of the prodigal son, Luke 15. That's not what we're going to talk about this morning. What I want to talk to you about is there are a lot of reasons prodigals leave. There's lots of reasons spiritually that people are prodigals. And you understand by prodigal we mean that they go to live reckless. It's not the idea sometimes that we attach with that word, but to wasteful, the idea that they waste all the potential that they have, all of the good that was given them becomes absolutely useless because of what that word entails in the story that we know in Luke 15 as well. Prodigals always have a reason for leaving home. The question is asked, spiritually speaking, when prodigals leave the Lord, when they leave us, why don't they come back? What is it that stands in their way? It may be that you are on that fringe. It may be that you have been away and never have fully again, embraced the people of God again. You have not fully come back in that sense of the Lord so that all is one, all is together in fellowship. And if you're here this morning, I hope that some of the things we say may touch you and help you in that journey. Well, one of the things that I would suggest to you is, first of all, is that the reason some people don't return is because sin is just fun. That's all there is to it. People love this world more than they love the things that God is offering. What does 2 Timothy 4:10 tell us about a man named Demas? You remember Paul writing that? And he says, using the New King James Version, Demas has forsaken me what? Having loved this present world. The English Standard says he's deserted me, for he is in love with this present world. You think about the fact that that's the problem that we all face. I mean, that's the core issue, is whether the things that are before us, the things that we can see and touch and smell and all of this, is what we become enamored with, or that we cannot touch, that we cannot see God and the Son ruling on the throne, and we only by faith believe those things, that it becomes more real to us than the things that are in this world. And I think about young people particularly when they go away from the Lord. May I suggest to you as parents, we cannot insulate our young people from this world. People try to do that in various ways. And I watch that happen among members of the church at times. Parents sometimes don't allow TV in their home. I'm not questioning you. It's not here to say you're right or wrong about that. I have my beliefs about that. You obviously have yours. I'm not going to convince you otherwise. But what I want to suggest to you is, can you insulate them from the grocery line? Have you ever looked at the magazines that are on the rack when you go out a grocery line? What I want to impress upon you is that if you try to insulate your children from this world, are you going to succeed? You cannot succeed unless we go into a monastery, unless we retreat to some place out in deep West Texas, and I can find you some places, and we just totally isolate ourselves from everything that is around us. We can become the Amish. But is that going to accomplish what the Lord said when He said, be salt and light? Now I realize I don't want to throw my young kids. I understand the reasoning that's behind all of that. But again, if your kids go to public school, how do you, or a private school, how do you insulate them from the values that are being taught in other homes that are not godly and are not thinking of God? And in this age in which we have computers and iPads and iPhones and all those other ones that you can access in a minute, that World Wide Web, how do you insulate your kids from this world? I'm going to tell you, in our day and age, they're not going to be innocent very long. There's a lot of stuff that I know that kids probably know too early that we would wish they wouldn't have to know. But it's just simply the world that we live in, and we have to learn how to combat it and deal with it. But we need to remember the principles that are in the Bible. Remember Daniel and his three friends. Remember that you can so instill values in the heart of a young Moses. I don't know how long she had him. She couldn't have had him much more than if she had him 5 years, if they nursed that long, which some of the records indicated that the Hebrews were, but that comes from a later time. What if she had him only 3 years? She instilled in that young boy's heart a faith that he could not be erased by what happened in that Egyptian throne room, and could not take away when all of the beads and boggles of the Egyptian world could not enamor him totally away from God, and did not succeed in turning Daniel and his three friends, with all the mesmerizing power of Nebuchadnezzar's throne, could not turn them away from their faith in God. Now the one thing we cannot and must not do is to say to them that sin is not fun, that sin doesn't have that side of it, because that's just not so. Now sometimes we may want to make like that, but it's not going to help our fight to get them to accept God over this world. In Hebrews the 11th chapter and at verse 24, you know the text says about Moses, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking for the reward. And what I want to teach my child, and what you hope I have, he's his own man now, is not to be myopic. is not to just look nearsightedly at what is here and now, but to take the better view, the longer view, as Moses did, that yes, there are pleasures, but they are fleeting. And the older you get, the more you're going to realize how fleeting they really are. Yes, there's a buzz to alcohol and cocaine and whatever else you would want to be involved. Yes, there is pleasure in sex outside of marriage. Yes, money can buy a great deal of fun in this world. But it will never answer the most important questions of life. None of that will. Where we came from. What are we supposed to do while we're here? And what happens to us when we die? Those things will never answer. I need to teach them that they are in the world, but they must not be of the world. The Romans passage on the screen from chapter 12 and verse 2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." You know that word transform is our word metamorphosis, of the transfer of an ugly old caterpillar, that greenhorn thing that eats all my tomato leaves, turns into one of the most beautiful butterflies. And when you think about that transformation from that, the thing he's saying to us is that must happen in us spiritually as we accept Jesus. And so what I need to do is my dead level best to convince my kids that Jesus is real, that he is the answer to life's most basic and most fundamental questions, and that hope is only in him. He is the Alpha and the Omega. He is the beginning and the end of all things. And if I do that, if I am successful in that, then as the Apostle Paul said, "I wrote to you to join in my epistle to keep company, not to keep company with sexually immoral people." But I certainly did not mean the sexually immoral people of this world. We must rub shoulders with them. How else will we be salt and light? And we need to teach our children that same thing. Not to be of this world, but they must be in this world. And sometimes prodigals do not return because, just like Demas, they never get it. They never see what is more important. I think of old men that I've known who have lived their life for either the pleasures of this world in the most horrible sense, the money and the power of this world, and you think when they come to the bitter end of their lives, that money could not buy them one more breath. And it does nothing for them beyond this world. There's a second reason that I would suggest to you that prodigals don't come, and we talked about that this morning, so I'm not going to, as I'm saying ahead, I'm not going to weigh on this very long. But Jim Henson brought up in class about consequences, and he had one in his mind, he said, of his mother making a... And I really don't think most of you that are really young have any impression of what that meant, for the fact that he couldn't watch that movie. If he didn't see that movie, you need to understand, in his day and in my day, there were three channels. You had ABC, NBC, and CBS. Maybe you were lucky and had PBS when it finally came to pass. But we had three channels. We got it by the antenna on the roof. Mine went way, way up above the roof to be able to get it out where I live. And then on top of all that, at midnight, they played the national anthem, and then it went psss. It just, you know, went off. It went off. So there weren't VHS tapes even. And there certainly were not DVDs. And so if you missed the movie, that was it. You just flat missed it. And so what he was trying to say was, his mother said, "Here, you get to watch that movie if you do this. And if you don't do this, here's the consequence." And there are natural consequences, as we were talking about in that class. And we often don't think down those roads. We don't ask, where is this going to go if I sleep with my boyfriend or girlfriend out of wedlock? Where is this going to go if I attend sporadically? Where is this going to go if I don't read my Bible every day? What is down that road if I sell out my soul for the money that's in this life? I tell you, the Bible tells us a lot of examples. Jacob is one of them. Remember, the very first story that we really get the life of Jacob beginning is he deceives his father. His mother's complicit in all that, and he deceives his father into thinking that he is Esau, and then for Isaac blesses him. Isaac wanted to do what God had obviously already told Isaac not to do, and that is that the younger the older would serve the younger, as he had told both of those parents. By faith, Isaac would not take it back when it had happened, but I want to center on Jacob. Jacob was a deceitful person from the beginning. He goes to Laban, his father-in-law, and guess what happens? Now he meets a guy who deceives him. So he marries first Leah, and then he has to wait 7 years and marry or work another 7 years for Rachel. And so it is the beginning of a polygamy situation that has all kinds of consequences. When he faces Laban later, he even mentions something we don't know about that story. He says, "You changed my wages 10 times. If all of the sheep that were coming out being born were speckled, then you would say, 'I'm going to take all the speckled.' Then God would make them solid colored." And he said, "You changed my wages 10 times. And so he's deceived again and again. And finally, his own sons deceive him about Joseph. Made it out like he died and sold him into slavery. And then Simeon and Levi, because Dinah had their sister, their immediate sister, the same mother, had been molested by Shechem. It was the town that he was named for. And so they had all the men agree in that city to be circumcised, and then they went in on the third day when they were incapacitated and killed every last able-bodied man in Shechem. And Jacob said, "You have made me a stench in the nostrils of the Canaanites. They're going to pursue us and they are more than us." But it was only because God put a terror upon them that Jacob was delivered. And then when he stands before Pharaoh, finally when he meets his son Joseph after many years of thinking he was dead, he asked him, "How old are you?" And Jacob said, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life." That was Jacob's assessment of his days. Isn't that a horrible thing to think about? That's what you'd say in a nursing home when you're talking to the young people that come into you. Well, that's the best you can say about it. And all of it happened because of that road he began on with his mother's encouragement. He paid an awful price for all of that. And that is the point that we often don't think about. There is always a payday. There is always going to be a day in which our sin, as Moses told the Israelites in Numbers 32:23, if you do not, I'm reading what's not up there, if you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Sooner or later, we say, the chickens come home to roost, our phrase. We will pay the price. Sin always takes you where you didn't intend to go. Do you think Samson thought when he was dilly-dallying with women that were foreign and not God's, and he had a lust for them, did he think that one day he was going to end up with that costing his eyes to be gouged out and him stripped of his power that was given to him by God, and all that he could accomplish for Israel is taken away from him? He never looked down that road. And neither do many young people who date somebody outside the faith and they're so enamored with them and they think they'll turn them or it'll be okay, and they end up, too many of them, down that same path. Sin will take you where you never intended to go and keep you longer than you intended to stay. Do you think the Israelites, as that Annie, as Dana said, kept being upped and up? If you don't do this, then I'm going to do this. And if you don't do that, after I've done that to you, I'm going to do this. Till finally, he said, "I'm going to send you away into captivity." Did they ever think it was going to cost them the temple being razed to the ground and all of the walls being torn down and the palaces burned and people slaughtered till blood ran in the street? The Romans, Josephus says, blood was as high as the reins upon a horse. There have been a lot of other places that have told that story when so many people have been slaughtered. And then they spent 70 years in Babylonian captivity. Sin will take you where you never intended to go and keep you longer than you intended to stay, and it will make you do things you never dreamed you would do. Ask David. Ask David if he thought when he began that lustful look upon Bathsheba that would lead to him getting her pregnant, that would lead to him killing one of his 30 mighty men who trusted him, betraying him, and other men that died at that wall but so that he could assure Uriah died. 10 years into her marriage, she knew her husband had no right to be married to her, and therefore she had no right to be married to him. 10 years. And she woke up. And she called an end to that marriage to do the Lord's will. And it cost her an awful price. If we don't look down the road, that is exactly what will happen to us. Thirdly, sometimes prodigals do not come back because we don't do anything to go find them. If he's my brother, then I am his keeper. And that should be of any one of us who are Christians. Galatians says to us in that passage, brethren, chapter 6, verse 1, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a man in the spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bezel wrote in the medieval times a commentary on this, and one of the passages he wrote on, or one of the comments he made about this verse was, he said, a whole commentary lies in the word brothers. Brethren, brothers. Do we believe that hell is lukewarm? Do we care? Could we see in our own hearts the heart of Cain to say, am I my brother's keeper? Ask yourself if you walk by those pictures and on the wall out there. Are there pictures who are not coming? You ever thought about first responders in a crisis? Those people that are trained to be the ones that come when there is a horrible hurricane or there is a terrible tornado outbreak. There's always those people that are called first responders. May I suggest to you that in Scripture, the first responders are the shepherds of a congregation. Absolutely. Hebrews 13:17 says what? Obey them who rule over you. Be submissive to them. For what? Here's their purpose. They watch out for your souls as those who will give an account. It is a terrible thing to take that responsibility on your shoulders. It is a thing upon which God will hold each shepherd in this church and in any church accountable. When names go missing, when people don't show up, do you go see them? I'm talking to the shepherds. I'm not saying that you don't. I'm asking you, and therefore, by implication to all of us, do we care enough to get out of the comfortable seat that we come to at the end of the day and go do work that still has to be done after our work at our regular jobs? Do we love the things that we love in this world too much? You see, sometimes people don't come back because we don't do enough to go find them. We need more, I didn't know how to say this, Barnabases, plural, we need more Barnabai. Do you remember when Saul came back, and now we'll know him after this as the Apostle Paul, and it says in Acts 9 that he tried to join the disciples, but they were afraid of him for good reason and didn't think he had changed, that he didn't believe that he was a disciple. But then it says these marvelous words, but Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles and set him before them and said, this is what happened. Barnabas, what got into that guy? Because he loved souls, that's what got into him. Because he could see a man who could change and he went after him. We have an adopt-a-student program here for good reasons. When parents turn kids over to us, they came to us 18 years. I tell these kids all the time when they're here, I say, do you realize now you're a senior, so you think, you know, we're big stuff at 22. But when you were 18, the ones that are now 18 coming in, they were 14 when you came here. So goes life. And you're gonna separate yourself as you grow older. And then you'll look back and think, like you all do when you come back, you say, man, they just look like babies. They look like little kids. Parents turn them over to us expecting what? Expecting that we care. That's the reason the elders implemented that type of thing. So that, how do you look over 120 college kids You can't look at them as a mass. You've got to look at them face to face. You've got to look at them one at a time. And so we dole out two and three to you, and maybe four in your case, or two in your case. You're responsible for them. Do you care about them? Are you involved with them? How do we go after people if they're lost? If those are the faces that are on that board out there that are missing, and they're your adopted kids, I don't even want to look because I don't want to know. Did you go after them? You, the adopted parents, did you go after them and find them and bring them back? What will God say to you in the end? Or to me? Sometimes prodigals do not come back because we appeal to them for the wrong reasons. We say stuff like, you know, you were a great song leader and you were a great Bible class teacher and we need you back. And all of that's good reasons, but it's not the reason. The reason we need to look them straight in the face and say is, you have dishonored your God. You have broken fellowship with Him. Do you understand how serious that is? AKA all the stuff that was said to us this past week about the covenant from Mike Wilson. Just bring that all into this thought process. How seriously do we take this covenant? And we say to them, come back for your family. Your family's grieving over you. And as important as all of those are, they are not anything compared to the fact that we have sinned. The person that needs to come back has sinned against the Lord. Against the blood that bought them in the first place. We need to remember that in Acts 11, 21 and 24, and a great number believed and turned to the Lord, and a great many people were added to the Lord. It doesn't... Even that passage in Acts 2, it says they were added to the church. The word church is not in that passage. It's added to them. But what I want us to see in the book of Acts is many times it points to the fact of what we really need to see. It's not the church that we disgrace. It is the Lord who bought us with His blood. And that's the reason that we need to confront someone with when they come back. And finally, and sadly, it may be that some do not come back because they know they will receive no mercy. Those Pharisees that brought that sinful woman who they said, they'd caught her in the very act of adultery, brought her in and literally, John says, threw her down in the midst of. Said, here's what the law of Moses says, a stoner, what do you say? And you know that great text says that Jesus stooped down. He stooped down and he wrote on the ground with his finger. He didn't even answer them. Boy, they kept after him. They thought they had him. I'm sorry, I'll stoop down over here for everybody. And he rose up in front of them and said, he who is without sin among you, let him throw the first stone. And one by one, beginning with the oldest to the youngest, they walked out. Man, that's a story. A great story. Because none of us are sinless. None of us. Does the brother know that he'll only receive harsh treatment if he comes back? Is that what the father did when he looked upon the horizon for his prodigal to come back, looking every day for his prodigal to come back? Till finally he saw his silhouette. He saw him come over that horizon. And what does it say he did? Tell all the servants, go tell him that he has to live out here in the pig pen. We'll find out whether he's changed. And it said he ran to him and he fell on his neck and he kissed him again and again and he put the best robe upon him and sandals on his feet. And they were saving the fatted calf apparently for something that was coming up, but he said, you go kill it now and prepare the feast. For this my son who was dead is alive again. He was lost and is found. So a preacher I know who had committed a great sin, guilty, hugely guilty, when he came into the building to read his resignation letter, that's how bad it was. As soon as he entered the building, 40 people rose up to go to him. And the elders stood around him at the pulpit as he read his letter and helped him through it when he would cry. Does that speak of you and me? Or do we place them on probation? You ought rather to forgive and comfort him, lest perhaps such a one be swallowed up with too much sorrow. So Terrence Mann looked at Ray Consello as they're going down that road at night, and he said, "Why didn't you go back?" And Ray Consello said, "Because I didn't know how." Do you want to know a father like the one who was looking over the horizon every day for his boy? And when he saw him, he ran to him. And he kissed him again and again. And he said, "Kill the fatted calf and throw a feast." That's this father. Pray God it is us. There's lots of reasons for not going back. I didn't even deal with pride and fear. There are lots of reasons to not go home. And none of them are any good. Not when you know this Father. Because when you know this Father who's looking for you, this Father who's longing for you, who wants to run to you and to kiss you and to put the best robe on you and sandals on your feet and throw a feast, this Father is the one who gave His Son to die on the cross for us. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned." You want to come back this morning while together we stand and sing.